Everything recording, perfect. All right, 3, 2, 1. Hello, Don.
How you doing?
Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. So a little pretense for everyone that is listening. We met, you work at the White Ash Cigar Bar in Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so when I went, I've been to other cigar bars, and I don't consider myself someone who knows a lot about cigars at all, but I know more or less what I kind of like, and I'll tell you, the first couple times I had been in there, you were a huge help, because you kind of go in there, and it's intimidating, you don't really know much about, you know, and you kind of, what are you looking for? And so was White Ash your introduction to cigars, or was it long before then?
Long ago.
Okay.
I mean, my story goes back. I mean, when I smoked my first cigar, I was 16 years old.
Okay.
You know, working with a bunch of guys over at a liquor store just up the street, you know, on the same street, Central Ave, you know, early in high school, right up to and through college. We'd pick a night to go clubbing, and then the other night we'd play cards. And one of the guys there, his father, was a member of a club, and it closed down early, so we'd have the place to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we'd go down there, you know, get some poker chips, for a drink, and just light up a cheap smoke. And I never liked cigarettes. I tried it once. It wasn't for me. But for whatever reason, I liked, you know, the cigar experience, the aroma of the cigar. And ever since smoking that, I had to learn more about it. I got away from it, came back to it. You know, certain people come in and out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got back with, you know, friends who enjoyed smoking, I smoked more. And then started branching out from there and learning more about cigars and talking to more people about, you know, their role in the whole process. And it just really took off from there.
Right. Yeah, I can see, I can resonate with the idea of not being a fan of cigarettes and being a fan of cigars because of, you know, when I associate cigarettes, I think of like kind of a nervousness, kind of a, but then when I think of a cigar, it's like you're relaxing, you're kind of,
I mean, a cigarette. Both of my parents used to, you know, chain smoke a lot. It was more of an addiction type of thing.
Yep.
Some people aren't addicted to cigarettes, but they will smoke when they drink. And I totally get that. You know, they go hand in hand. At the White Ash, we encourage you to smoke whatever you want, as long as it's not green, if you catch my drift.
Sure.
So pipe smoking, cigarette smoking, go ahead. You know, and of course, cigars. You know, I smoke a tobacco pipe there from time to time. And a few of my friends come in and we talk about pipe tobacco as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what's the, now pipe is even, in my mind, that's even further away in the spectrum of that type of stuff.
Sure.
The
pipe smoking is an acquired taste. A lot of people who are familiar with pipe smoking be like, oh, I remember my grandfather or my father smoking a pipe and it had a wonderful aroma. Now, not all pipe smoke, the fragrant aroma that it gives off is not exactly what it tastes like. There are hints of that. You know, it's an acquired taste, and there is a lot more work involved with using a pipe versus just cutting and lighting a cigar.
Sure.
You know, the selection of the tobacco, the way you pipe, you know, you pack your bowl, you know, how often you have to light the thing, cleaning it, rotating your pipes so you're not overheating your pipes. That's a whole, probably a whole nother show.
Right. Do you think maybe that's why it kind of faded off? It's not so much of a,
believe it or not, there are a lot of pipe smokers still out there, and I think it was a resurgence during COVID. People were home, they kind of picked it up a little more.
Sure.
You know, even people, there are people out there that use they still use snuff, which is a finely ground tobacco.
Oh, so that's different.
In a small tip. Yeah, it's in a small tin. You'll actually put a little dash on the crest of your hand band, and then lightly breathe in, not snort it. It's not, you know,
right.
Because it will go in, but it gives you a nice aroma.
Sure.
And a little bit of a nicotine buzz, too.
Okay, so you're not actually smoking it?
No. Ah. It's a ground, fine tobacco. You just take a little bit in through the nose, and it gets into the nose, permeates your olfactory zone, and you just have a pleasant aroma.
Sure.
That kind of stays with you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I've always been, for whatever reason, I've always liked the darker leaves on the outside.
Okay.
but when I try to tell people, when I go with a friend or whatever, I'm like, hey, you know, the darker ones don't always necessarily mean that they're harsher than the lighter ones.
Absolutely right. It's quite the opposite.
Right.
You know, the darker the leaf, the better fermentation process is, allowing the leaf to develop its natural sugars and oils to come to the surface. The longer you let it ferment, the darker it'll get, to the point of being a Oscuro, which is a deep, rich black. And those are some of the most pleasant smokes out there.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people will start with what I call a gateway cigar, sometimes a flavored cigar. I don't know if you want me to say brands and things like
that. Oh, whatever.
You know, but some people will smoke the Black and Mild cigarillos. Okay. They'll smoke the acids by Drew Estate, because they have botanical oil and sometimes coffee flavors and,
okay,
you know, floral notes, very sweet cigars as well. There's a brand called Tatiana that I get a lot of the females smoking those to start. They're very intimidated at first, but then they realize just how aromatic they are and sweet. You can actually match them to their drink, because there's an array of flavors. And it just, it's a kind of an inclusion for the women that don't normally smoke cigars, that can have something in common and actually enjoy a cigar, you know, with their significant other or just a bunch of girls who want to try some cigars.
Right.
You don't have to go, you know, full Monty and get into, you know, hand-rolled cigars that have no flavor and get right into some of the more aggressive notes that they might have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that there's an incredible science behind the whole thing. There's different parts to cigars.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things is the region.
Okay, yeah.
I've always been, you know, I understand that some of the Brazilian leaf is a little spicier, and, you know, Connecticut's, I guess you would say, more buttery and smooth and that type of thing.
Sure.
Now, is that really just comes from where they're grown?
There's a lot to it. I mean, depending on the type of strain of tobacco that you're growing and what you're going for. You know, if you're talking Connecticut wrapper from Connecticut, United States, that's grown in the shade. Since we have a very high cloud cover in the United States, they have to grow that leaf under cheesecloth to diffuse the sun.
Okay.
That way they don't get dark and develop such, you know, richness to them. They stay light. They don't go through the same amount of fermentation, you know, as a dark leaf will. You can get a Connecticut, an Ecuadorian Connecticut, which is darker. It's going to taste richer because of the soil. You know, the soil in other regions, they're different around the world. You know, you've mentioned regions, and that has a lot to do with it.
Sure.
You know, the pH and mineral content, what they're using for fertilizer. If it's grown near citrus or coffee, it's going to take on those notes. So Dominican tobacco has more of a citrus note, has some spice to it, but it's not as pepper forward as an Esteli region of Nicaragua, which is extremely volcanic soil. Mm. Which will bring that pepper note forward, you know. And in Nicaragua, you could grow a leaf in Jalapa, or even Condega, which is a much milder leaf and not as pepper forward. So
it's interesting that what grows in the area also affects how the leaf smokes and tastes.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll get, you know, if you're in a region that it's, you know, Costa Rican, you'll get a lot of coffee notes. You know, if they're grown near, or if they're using scraps from that crop to fertilize, you know, tobacco farm plants and stuff, you might get a coffee note. I mean, a lot of the tobacco grown has a natural occurring coffee and cocoa note to it.
Okay.
But it's not like coffee milk, or it's not like a milk chocolate. I'm talking about like chewing on the actual bean, that bitterness to
right.
it.
Right.
And, you know, having the palate to be able to distinguish, you know, cocoa from coffee, or, you know, dark chocolate from you know, like a either a light or a dark roast coffee or an espresso taste to it. Not everybody has that palate.
Mm.
Some people just smoke the cigar to smoke the cigar.
Right.
You know, and there are different levels to everything. Yeah.
Sure. It's always been interesting to me when someone finds a level of proficiency in something to where it's like, I know where this is coming from. I can taste this. Mm-hmm. Same thing with wine. Same thing with food.
Right. You become a sommelier.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and then you had mentioned, well, we might as well talk about this now. You run a, it's called the Cigar University.
It's a cigar college.
Sure.
So I put together a 4-part seminar at the White Ash. I've gone through many classes so far. It's been extremely well received. I appreciate everyone who took the class and enjoyed it so much. But I put together a 3-part PowerPoint presentation with it. A lot of knowledge. I paired 2 cigars with each of the first 3. And then for the 4th part of the seminar, I actually put you through a full-blown blending seminar, whereas we really hone in on the characteristics, aromas, and flavors of the tobacco from distinct regions.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to mention. How, I think you had said at the end, you get like a cigar that has different leaves in different regions in the same cigar, and you got to kind of...
Yeah. The cigar consists of the same basic filler, which is the inside part of the cigar. It has a consistent binder, which holds all the filler together. And the wrapper does change from at the very end. You'll light it up, and it has what we call a shaggy foot, where the filler tobacco protrudes past the wrapper and the binder. So when you fire it up, you taste only the filler. And as you smoke into it, it'll start burning the wrapper, which starts off with a Connecticut wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be able to tell a change. And then it's going to move into a Sumatra wrap, which is an Indonesian tobacco leaf. Then from there, you know, it'll change from Connecticut to a Cameroon, the Indonesian Sumatra, go into a broadleaf, a traditional Maduro, and then fade into a Corojo. So if your palate is tuned in and you're paying attention enough, you should be able to taste the subtle change as you burn into the different wrappers.
Mm.
But there's a lot, and that's another thing, is a big part, is how you smoke your cigar. There are certain things you really need to do in order to get everything out of that cigar.
Sure. It's just like when wine taster look at the legs and then sniff it and the whole thing. There's a whole... Is there a... Because I know to become an actual wine sommelier, there's like tests and levels. Is there a similar thing with cigars?
There are. There's a university out there, Academy of Cigar, ACS, Academy of Cigar Sommeliers. I did some studying with them as well. They're very well put together class. It touches on a lot of thing on a organoleptic level, which is breaking it down right to its root. You know, where does it come from? Where are these tastes coming from? And then what can you pair it with that'll have either something complementary or such a contrast that it actually works?
Mm.
And that goes for any spirit, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, and even foods.
So, you're saying like the pairing?
Sure.
So you pair it with something that maybe you would think wouldn't work, and it's somehow...
Yeah. So I do that independently. If someone wants to have an event, you know, a bunch of people, and they're into that, you know, you tell me what you're into. Is it bourbon? Is it scotch? Is it wine? Is it food? Whatever you want, I can mix it all up. You know, I can start with a food, break it up in the middle with like a fine espresso, and then finish with a fine spirit. And for each third of that one cigar, each of those are going to match perfectly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's because I've actually had before. I don't, when I go to a bar, I typically don't have beer or any of that stuff. I'm usually a whiskey, rye, especially if I'm going to have a cigar or something like that.
Right, sure.
And there's times where I've had, you know, a Basil Hayden rye or something, and it works absolutely perfect with whatever I'm smoking.
Sure.
Yeah, and then there's times where it's like,
Right. You know, Basil Hayden dark rye is one of my favorite things to pair because it is so versatile.
Sure.
You know, when you get in the people shy away from rye, it's got that bite and it's nasty. And no, it's actually not. We carry a Seafog rye that's actually very sweet.
Okay.
And the Basil Hayden dark rye, if you don't know, is made with a touch of port, which sweetens it up. And it really helps with the contrast of the cigar. So, you know, you've got, you know, a wonderful, you know, bourbon whiskey flavor with a subtle finish of a sweetness. And if you match it up with the right cigar, it's really going to pop.
Yeah, see, I can't agree when someone says that rye is bitter. I've never thought it was bitter.
No, I mean, you've got the right palate for it.
Yeah.
You know, some people, you know, there's nothing more subjective than taste.
Right.
You know, and that goes to cigars or anything else.
Sure.
You know, so I mean, I've heard a lot of different opinions on a lot of different libations, if you will, on a lot of different cigars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one person's cigar that they won't smoke is somebody else's favorite cigar. You know, same thing with the spirit.
Right. Yeah, it's and you'd think, like, the way some people talk about it, there's like a fine, like a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, yeah, but tunnel vision.
Yeah,
you know, you're just not getting out of your comfort zone.
Sure,
you know, and you try one thing that you don't like, and it's kind of dead to you, but you didn't have the right thing with it.
That makes sense.
You know, sometimes you can take something you absolutely don't like, and if you pair it right, it's going to create a whole different synergy with those flavors.
Right. I've always thought, because I haven't tried it, but it must be a little strange to smoke a cigar and have a meal at the same time. Is that?
Well, I'm not talking about eating a full meal.
Right.
So, give you an idea. I'll take a cigar that's a stronger cigar that naturally has, maybe it has a slight leathery taste, a Habano wrapper with a pepper forward and a nice bitter cocoa flavor to it. So sometimes that cigar will change, you know, to a different flavor altogether, depending on, you know, the first, second, and third portion of the cigar. Mm-hmm. Each have their own part to play. You know, usually the cigar, long story short, the way the bunchers make them, sometimes they top-loaded the tips of the leaves are up front. That's the most intense spot. You're going to get a high pepper content right up front.
Yes.
So maybe I'll go with 95% dark cocoa. And there's a way to actually taste it. You know, you don't want to just gobble a chocolate bar down. You want to take a little 5-gram portion, you know, bite off the end, let it sit on your tongue, melt, let it coat your tongue, slap it around mouth, you know, get all of it, all taste buds, and take a nice deep draw of that cigar. You're going to find it melding together. Then after that first third, maybe it'll change to a coffee note. I'm going to pair it with a nice, maybe Colombian black espresso.
Sure.
You're just going to get into something like that. You're going to smoke the cigar, which has a naturally occurring coffee note. You're going to sip the espresso, and you're like, wow, this is great. And then if the cigar tends to end fairly aggressively, for several reasons, a lot of times there'll be some tar buildup, depending on how you cut your cigar and how fast you smoke it. When you get into the last third, you want something that'll stand up to the strength of that final portion of the cigar, and I'll use a straight spirit, such as a bourbon, perhaps a scotch,
right.
Depending on what notes are left over in that cigar in the last third. So that's when I said the food thing, it can be chocolate, you know,
little like coffee bites here and there.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. Yeah. You brought up a good point, how different parts of the cigar smoke differently, which is something I always found to be, oh, it's the cigar's fault that I'm not, you know, getting a thicker cloud. Because in my mind, it's really satisfying when you get a real thick cloud, you know, myself. Sure. And I find that happens more closer to the end.
It can. At that point, you got to realize when you're lighting the end of your cigar, the draw on the cigar has a long way to go to get to you.
Sure.
Okay, so that all that smoke has to make it to you and then be exhaled. Okay, when you're at the end of the cigar, the cherry, the burning ember that keeps the cigar lit, is like an inch or two away from your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at the point of incineration right there. So all that smoke's going to be present. So that's one possibility as to why that would happen. Two could be the construction of the cigar, how firmly it's packed, how dense it is, what type of tobacco it is. And lastly, it's how that cigar was stored. If that cigar was not stored properly, if it's over-humidified, it's going to be a little bit too moist. You know, the humidity is going to be a little too high.
Okay.
And it's not going to burn well. It's going to be semi-wet tobacco, if you will. You know, wet things don't burn out.
Can't work around that one.
It's even
the storing. It's a lot of this, because I've worked in the restaurant industry pretty much my whole life, and a lot of this sounds very much like different types of alcohol.
Yes,
and you know, you got to keep red wine at a different temperature than you would keep white wine, of course.
Yes.
Different types of spirits and that type.
Absolutely.
So. The idea that there's a room dedicated to storing the cigars,
right?
It's very reminiscent of like a wine cellar. That's
absolutely
exactly what I think about.
Yeah, environmental conditions are 100% the number one thing in the preservation of a cigar.
Sure. Now, have you spent time in other parts of the world trying
different? I have not yet done that. I've gotten the invitation to do so.
Sure.
COVID kind of shut that down. I plan on doing that. I've got a few places I need to go and people I need to see that are big in the industry. I plan on spending some time and studying under some of the masters out there and learning what I can from them.
Sure. Is that like South American
areas? Sure. We're talking, yeah. Dominican, Nicaragua.
Sure.
Even Costa Rica. But yeah, you know, getting into the actual factories and getting in the fields and talking to the blenders, especially the master blenders, and gleaning information from them, you know, their wisdom, because they've been doing it for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as you said, it is such a science. There are literally millions of combinations that can go wrong, you know, and then right. Just sifting through all that to find something that's actually smokable is a small miracle.
Right. Now, a lot of those countries, that's got to be a huge industry for them, the tobacco industry.
Yeah, some of them, it's their number one crop,
right,
you know, of export, you know, along with, you know, anything organic for that matter. So whether it be their citrus, their coffee, you know, their tobacco.
Right.
It is definitely because the climates in which they're grown in, it's kind of conducive to that.
Now, you hear a lot about, you know, sustainable farming and that type of thing nowadays.
Sure.
Is that a conversation in the realm of tobacco farming? Is that like a worry?
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
And in my opinion, nobody does it better than Placencia.
Okay.
You know, Placencia has 100% organic method on which they grow their tobacco with no pesticide. You know, anything that's usually used as a pesticide is organic anyway. They don't need it. They actually use hornets.
Hornets.
Yeah, to eat anything that might chew on tobacco leaves. You know, the 100% pure water is used. Just the painstaking efforts they've done to ensure that once they reap a crop of tobacco plants, that they have 100% organic way of maintaining the viability of that soil. You know, so they don't need to grow into other areas and constantly expand. They can continually grow. They've mastered that method, and again, it's some of the best tobacco on the planet, again, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, it's huge to if you're not worrying about the environment where, right, you know, your money's being essentially generated. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think the real big corporation, just like in any other industry, the real big corporations, yeah, push that idea kind of aside. We have margins, you know.
Right. Yeah, there are margins, but if they know if they want to stay in the business and be sustainable, you know, they have to use what they have.
Yes.
You know, and not worried about expanding, and there's only so far up the mountain you can go and plant tobacco. You know, you're going to run out of space or sustainable soil at some point. So if those measures aren't taken, then, you know, it's going to be a short run for your company.
Right. Are there any areas in the U.S. where tobacco is like a kind of more of a staple? Because I understand Connecticut doesn't grow anymore. Is that?
No, Connecticut farms are 100% in the tobacco business.
They do. Okay.
Yeah. So Drew Estate has several farms there in which they use leaves for their T52 and Liger Privada line. And another one in the Privada line is grown there. Specific leaves for specific parts of the cigar. Connecticut still maintains, you know, the Connecticut leaf. You know, it's still highly sought after. They're still making it. Pennsylvania is doing a great job of growing Pennsylvania broadleaf. It's a wonderfully sweet tobacco. The Deliverance Porcelain by the Black Label Trading Company, a Blackwork Studio, make a cigar. It's a Connecticut wrap, but it's got Pennsylvania broadleaf in it, and it's spicy, even though it's a Connecticut, but it's got a wonderful dried fruit note that runs right through of it, and that's Pennsylvania broadleaf.
Mm-hmm.
Florida FSG, Florida Sun Grown, they're doing a great job incorporating. They made one of the first 100% all United States tobacco cigars.
So the whole,
yeah, everything,
every piece,
binder,
of it,
wrapper, fillers, all United,
wow,
States,
okay,
grown. So they're kind of making some big strides with putting us on the map, so to speak, as being viable in the cigar business.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a big deal. I mean, we're here talking about every other country, mm-hmm. you know, and
you haven't hit the big one yet, but okay.
Cuba, of course.
Yeah.
What's what makes their cigars the talk of the town? Everything.
Honestly, it's the perfect storm over there. You know, zero latitude. You know, it just they're just in the eye of the storm, so to speak.
It's just they're made to grow cigars.
Yeah, their water is great. Their season is perfect for growing tobacco. Their soil is a big part of the taste that you get. The soil is just unique, and it's a compound makeup. As we know, the seeds were taken from Cuba and planted elsewhere and hybridized into other strains like Criollo 98, things of that nature. They just don't taste the same. You know, one that they're hybridized to, they're just not planted in the same type of soil.
Right.
You know, there are Cuban-esque cigars out there, but it's if you've smoked a real good true Cuban, then you'll know, you know, just right off the bat.
How do you get them? That's the question.
Who's listening?
Hopefully somebody.
Yeah, you know, connections are the way to go. There are some distributors out there. I know there's France, Switzerland, Germany, even Canada. There are distributors out there that'll ship them out.
Okay.
If you've got a good relationship with them. You know, we've got to get rid of this embargo.
Sure.
That's a double-edged sword, too, because I don't know if they did that, if Cuba could keep up with the increasing demand, because they're Everybody supplying wants. The rest of the world with their cigars. Now, you know, the U.S. can get them, and, you know, they're already having issues keeping up. So there's that.
So hold on. You said the U.S. can't get them right now.
Right.
Okay. So you're saying if they were to get them, it would just be it'd be even more of a mess because they can't keep up, essentially.
Yeah. You know, I mean, right now, because of, unfortunately, the pandemic slowed everything down. A lot of people got sick. You could understand, you know, in the Honduras, parts of the Dominican and Nicaragua, they don't have the same level of health care we do.
Sure.
You know, so it hit them and affected them a lot harder. So you didn't have as many people tending the fields. You didn't have nearly enough people rolling cigars. That's why anybody in the business is feeling the pain of back-ordered cigars. You know, we're thankful for what we have, but they just trickle in. It's not like if I order 30 boxes, I'm going to get 30 boxes. They're going to tell me, you know, at least 20 of those are back-ordered. Mm. Here's what we got. So we kind of stock what we can.
With a product that goes through so many different trials, like cigars, right. You can see how it gets messy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge process. Take the class. yeah, you'll have a better appreciation of just what goes into making that little rolled miracle there.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how often do you do the class? Is it?
As demand dictates.
Okay.
You know, if I have enough people say, I'm going to take the class. I'll offer the class.
Right.
You know, or I'll just throw it out there, you know, a few times a year and see who bites and wants to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's a bunch of guys that they just talk to each other. I had a large group last time who was, they're members of the same country club. And they all talked to each other like, we're all going to do this. So I had a big group back there. Another time I only had 6 people in the class, which made for a more intimate setting. There's a lot more directed conversation, and it was just a cool experience. Plus, you know, at the tail end of the pandemic, I was able to, you know, space people apart properly.
Right. Yeah. I feel like those smaller settings, it really makes a difference.
It does, because you can spend a lot more time with individual questions and, you know, individual mentoring as it happens.
Right. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to a Catholic school that ended up shutting down, elementary school. Mm-hmm. But it was not a lot of kids, you know, it wasn't a big school.
Right.
And I remember moving from Providence to North Providence and going to like a public school. Okay. And North Providence public school isn't even that bad, considering.
No,
okay. But, you know, class is way bigger.
Huge.
Yeah. And it was a big, shift
right.
when it came to learning and personalization and that type of thing.
No, you kind of cookie cutter approach to things and you just throw it at you and it's up to you.
Right.
Yeah.
That is a great idea to have, a little program, because I had a mentor that told me, you know, you teach somebody something, they're going to remember you. They're going to remember you through, you know, what they taught.
Yeah.
And, or what you learned. And, you know, that's a great way to get out because there's a market for it. People want to know more. That's why I wanted to, you know, get somebody on here.
Right, right.
You know,
I enjoy it. Some of the most rewarding experiences I have is when people, quote unquote, graduate. So they move on from one of those gateway cigars into, you know, a traditional unflavored, pure 100% hand rolled tobacco cigar, right. And they love it. And then they go from smoking a light cigar to a stronger cigar with more character and wanting more. And that's also a sign of someone who's really has an appetite for it and wants to learn more, grow more, try more things and enhance their palate. And, you know, just to see them grow and then, you know, they get all excited. Tell me, oh, I tried this cigar, you know, and talks to me about it. I'm like, that's fantastic. You know, and, you know, it's, you know, the appreciation's there. And I, you know, I love our crew over at the White Ash, and our patrons are just so receptive of it. You know, they want cigar suggestions. You know, they'll say, when's Don getting here? And, you know, and I'll come in and, you know, take them in the humidor and
sure.
Give them a little education and put them onto a stick. And usually we can get them into a cigar that really, really hits home with them.
Sure. No, that is a big help to have somebody there, you know, guiding you, especially when it's your first time and you really know what you're looking for.
It can be so intimidating, daunting, and I mean, some of the class does that as well, because I touch on subjects that are not taught in books, such as cigar etiquette and cigar lounge etiquette, and how not to look like a noob.
Right.
Because you're going to be sitting there and doing absolutely the worst thing, and people are kind of giving you the side eye going,
yeah.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'll just sit with people who are new to the lounge and stuff and kind of, you know, talk to them a little bit and see what their level is, smoking experience, and what category they fit in. There are two distinct categories. There are people who smoke cigars and there are cigar smokers. Very
okay.
Different. Very different.
Cigar smokers are more
cigar
dedicated.
Smokers are, yeah, they're in, exactly. I mean, you light that cigar and there's a commitment involved.
Sure.
Okay, you want to give that cigar, I mean, pay homage to who made it out of respect. You know, if unless it's not for you, smoke the whole thing, you know, think about it, concentrate on it, see what you're getting out of it, because it took a lot to get to you. People who smoke cigars would be occasional smokers. I grab one for the golf course. If they drop it and leave it there, it's no big deal.
Right.
You know, first-time smokers to the lounge, you know, it might not be for you. You might, if you inhale it, it's going to be a very short night anyway.
Yes.
But, you know, people who smoke cigars will try it. Hopefully they'll turn into cigar smokers because they'll realize not only the enjoyment taste-wise, but all the peripheral things that can happen on a social level, on a relaxation, and just a palate experience that you can have.
Right.
You know, and just gain that appreciation for a cigar.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said you talk about the way you act in a place in a cigar lounge.
Mm-hmm.
The word is skipping my mind for a second.
Etiquette.
Yeah, yes. My God. I remember when I first was going to go to a cigar bar
mm-hmm.
and a cigar lounge, and like I looked up etiquette. Because I think that's one of the things that deters people from doing something new. They don't want to look like an idiot.
Sure.
You know, it's
absolutely.
Environment's a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And then, you know, I'll if I see something that raises an eyebrow or something, I'll just go and I'll sit and talk to them. And I'll say, oh, see, you did this. I was wondering why you did that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and kind of ask, you know, where that came from. Oh, that's all I know. I said, okay, well, this is how we do it.
Try it this way.
You know, just as an idea. And here's what, more importantly, here's why.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
Not just because I said so or that's the thing to do. There's a legitimate reason for doing and not doing certain things.
Right.
You know, I mean, etiquette is not just behaving in, you know, an acceptable manner. You know, there's a lot that goes into selecting the right cigar lounge for you, you know, depending on your level of knowledge with cigars.
Sure.
You know, if you want to walk into the Davidoff, you know,
is that a big one?
In Tampa, yeah. And, you know, walk in there and not need any help, that's one thing.
Right.
You know, but it can be very intimidating. I mean, it's a luxury plant. It's a real nice place, et cetera, and so on. White Ash is on the higher scale. You know, it's not really a bar. It's a true lounge,
yes.
Spacious. And you can walk in there and be like, do I belong here? You know, if, you know, I don't really care if you're coming out of work as a plumber or a doctor or what, you know, as long as you have an appreciation for the lounge and what you're doing, you're more than welcome.
Sure.
You know, if you're going to walk in and, you know, a Speedo on a tank top, that's a problem, you know, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, you want to look up a little bit about the lounge you're going to, what the seating capacity is, what they do and don't allow. There are cigar lounges that do not allow cigarette smoking.
Okay.
So sometimes you take a significant other or a bunch of friends that don't smoke cigars, they want to smoke cigarettes, they might be disappointed if they go into a place where they have to keep going outside and having a cigarette. Some places just don't allow it.
Right.
You know? But there's a lot to the etiquette things where, you know, just from selecting a cigar and what to do in the humidor, what not to do, and all the way to when you're done with the cigar, what do you do with it, you know, type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm only 24, so from what I've always heard is that cigars were huge, you know, 20, maybe 30 years ago. Like, they were a bigger deal, I guess you can say.
You know, there's been several resurgences of cigars in general, especially in the United States. You know, pipe used to be king as a symbol of affluence. You know, and wealth, you know, wearing the top hat. It was it depicted in movies and commercials and TV shows and black and white back in the day, etc. Then cigars came about, and it was a boom for a while until the Industrial Revolution. And that's where the rolling machine was invented, and people were working more in factories and stuff. They didn't have time to enjoy a cigar, so they came out with a cigarette. And the rest is history. It wasn't later until around 1990 when Mr. Schenken, who was doing the Wine Spectator at the time, came out with the first issue of Cigar Aficionado. And that was kind of the next big boom of the cigar industry. It kind of put them on the map where they're really talking about it and rating them. And it was more of a luxurious thing to do.
Sure.
And that really brought it back. Back in the 90s.
Right. It was like a kind of a status change. Like,
yeah,
this kind of the way that cigarettes would market toward, like you said, working class people. And,
sure.
You know, at the end of the day, I have a cigarette. Yeah. It was kind of a shift there with the cigar market.
Yeah. No, it was a well-done publication, still is. Whereas they have nice ads for cigars. They talk in depth about them. And then they rate them based on categories. And size of the vitola of the cigar, etc. And it really is a refinement of the cigar world experience where you can, you know, really gain some knowledge about seeing what's out there, about what you might want to try. And they have a lot of other filler in the magazine about the finer things, you know, luxury watches, places to go, things to see, wines, food, etc.
Right.
It's all about, like, the finer things in life. And so they're putting it in the same class as a luxury item.
Right. Smart. Makes sense. I mean, a lot of the times you see, like you had mentioned with the pipe, it's like a sense of class, a sense of, you know.
Yeah, a sense of sophistication.
Sure.
You know, there is an air about it. I mean, you have your glorified cigar smokers, you know, mafia movies and shows.
Right.
And somebody smoking a stogie. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. And, you know, you have that image where, you know, I know people who were specifically interested in that alone was the visual aspect of it. You know, I would look cool smoking a cigar. It's a cool thing to do. Okay, there's that. whatever gets you there, but let's get the why fixed.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I find that too. Sometimes you see a cool picture of somebody like James Dean or something looking to the side with a cigarette, and you're like, that's kind of cool, but then, you know.
You got FDR.
Yeah.
You know, you got George Burns, Jack Nicholson.
Churchill.
Churchill.
Yeah.
Woodrow Wilson smoked a cigar. I mean, you name it. You know, there are some big figures and famous, you know, Kennedy smoked a lot of cigars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pictures of him doing so. And they look good doing it. You know, it's just like, wow, you know, this guy's got it going on.
Sure.
You know, and there's that part of it, whereas it is a luxury. You know, it's unfortunately the FDA is going after tobacco, saying that you're targeting children and stuff. Children are not going to spend $12, or kids underage aren't going to look for a cigar.
Sure.
To smoke.
They'll buy a Juul or some.
Buy a Juul, or they'll buy, I mean, other than Massachusetts, a menthol cigarette or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
I mean, it is a luxury item. It's not an inexpensive thing to do.
Right.
You know, there are inexpensive cigars. If you enjoy cigars and you find one you like for, you know, a small amount of money, they're out there. You know, good for you. But going into, especially a cigar lounge, you know, you're not going to find that style of smoke there.
Mm. You know, find something a little more refined, of course.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to find something under even $8.
Right. And that's I think, one of the coolest things is that you can get an array. You can have a good cigar for $8. Sure. You can have a good cigar for $30.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and the price is not always indicative of the product you're getting.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of name brands that can be very pricey that personally I don't care for. It's not the right cigar for me. Mm. You know, and again, it comes down to that subjectivity of taste, you know, what your palate likes or what you kind of lean towards. But yeah, you can find fabulous smokes between $10 and $15.
Right. And now back to the aesthetic thing. You see a lot of, you know, young college kids, they win a national title. They got a cigar in their mouth.
Yeah. Well, half of them, they'll light it and they'll start it.
And they just get rid of it. It's just for the picture.
That's really what it is. It's an image thing. A cigar is a celebratory thing to do.
Yes.
You know, and speaking of that, I mean, cigars are an amazing thing. And I start off all my seminars with this, and it's just one of the very few things that, regardless of race, creed, or color, can bring people together. You know, there's no discussion. We have signs up that says, "Welcome, friends. Please check your religious and political views at the door." That's one of the etiquette things. You don't talk about that at cigar lounge.
Sure.
It's not what it's about. It's about camaraderie. It's about enjoying the smoke. You know what I mean? And there is a huge social aspect, you know, to smoking a cigar. Now, I also enjoy cigars alone.
Yes.
Sometimes you just want to reflect, chill out, decompress, and a cigar will do that for you as well.
Right.
You know, but I understand the glamification of that. And it starts off, I mean, there's pictures of Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, you know, winning titles and smoking cigars. I get it. Some of those guys are actual cigar smokers.
Yeah, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan
smokes cigars all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy knows what he's doing. You know, he's obviously a cigar smoker.
Yes.
You know, it's rumored, I heard something that he would smoke them before a game.
Wow.
You know? And if that's what gets you in the zone, God bless you.
Yeah.
You know, but there's so much more than just looking cool. I know a lot of people thought they looked cool until they inhaled one.
Yeah.
And then, again, yeah, not so cool. So right. You see the college kids grabbing cigars and stuff. I've had people come to the lounge in large numbers, you know, bachelor parties, young guys, you know, they get in there, everyone wants to smoke a cigar, and I tell them, you know, I try to help them out and stuff, though. One's going to inhale the thing, and it's going to be a short night for
yes.
them, you know. And some people can inhale cigars. Some people can handle that.
Right.
Good for you. You know, I don't advocate for that. You know, I don't find a need for it. It's just, you know, really for the taste and stuff.
Right.
There is some nicotine contained, obviously, in cigars, so some people want the nicotine aspect of it. But it's definitely had its time as something that was glamorized.
Right. You've brought up a couple different times about inhaling
yes.
the cigar.
Right.
And I can't help but tell my first time smoked a cigar. I was also probably around 16. And my buddy Nick, he had given me a call one day text. And he's like, "Hey, you know, want to hang out?" It was like a Sunday afternoon. When you're in high school, you have nothing to do if you're not working or whatever. And he's like, "You want to smoke some cigars?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." We never did them before. We've talked about it. Yeah. We're going to try them. And we went to the place you should go and get a cigar, a gas station. Yeah. So we went there. And this gas station actually had a little, not a room, but a little humidor where you could pick something out that looked like a legitimate, you know, legitimate right. smoke. And you know, he grabbed a cutter and we went back to my house. My parents weren't around and we probably lopped off half the thing. And we went for a walk around the neighborhood. Nice Sunday.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good idea now if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it does.
But, you know, we were walking and the cigar was probably, I don't know the gauge. I don't know the gauges, but it was pretty thick. It was pretty thick and it was, you know, maybe something like that, 6 inches.
Yeah, it's a Gordo 660.
Yeah, so smoked that quick. Like fast,
oh boy.
Without realizing how often I was in. There were times when I would inhale, and I would. But there were times you don't notice you're doing it.
Right.
So we're doing it. We're fine. And then at the end, for the most part, I'm good. And then at the end, we just kind of stop, and we're at back at my house, and we find ourselves laying on my car, the hood of my car, just staring at the sky, dying. Mm-hmm. Like I'd probably been drunk one time in my life at that point.
Yeah.
And that was this, it was the same thing. I felt the same way. Woozy, just sweating, disgusting. I had to drive him home. Oof. And I just laid in my bed and stared at the ceiling until I went to sleep.
Yeah. Now you look at that nicotine high, you know, you get the spins and nausea and the sweats.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not used to that, you know, a little bit of poison in the lungs of, you know, if you're inhaling it and stuff. And
sure.
People don't react well to that 9 times out of 10.
Right.
Yeah. Not the thing to do.
Yeah. It was brutal. And to think they were, you know, I mean, they were pretty big for your first time. They were a pretty big cigar.
Yeah. And just, you know, ripping right through it. And unfortunately, you know, some first time smokers of cigars will have that experience and they'll never go back.
Yes.
Because they've never been advised otherwise.
Yeah. I probably didn't for a while. I was like, let me.
Yeah, I'd be a little cautious myself.
And it's happened here and there. Not to that extreme, but now I can realize it. All right, let me sit it down for a little bit, drink a little water, cool off on it, and then try again.
Well, here's a little hint for you.
Yeah.
So a little trick that works. If you're even smoking a cigar properly, it might be a little bit stronger than what you're used to.
Yes.
And you start getting that sensation, like, oh, I'm getting dizzy, I'm starting to sweat. Drink some Pepsi.
Okay.
Okay, or eat a chocolate, you know, because basically what you have to do is you need to get some sugar in you.
Okay.
And the sugar will cause the body to start processing things. And it'll bring that down in about 10 minutes or so, you'll be fine.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's. Yeah. I also learned to, you know, eat something.
Yeah. I mean, smoking on an empty stomach is, it's, you know.
It's like drinking on an empty stomach.
You know, same thing. You need something to absorb whatever's going in.
And you don't think that because it's a smoke. It's not like you're ingesting, you know?
No, I mean, even if you're smoking properly and not inhaling, you know, there is some nicotine being delivered.
Sure.
You know, there. So if the body is processing food and other things, it's going to just process that without any issue.
Right. I think one of the best ones I've had up until now, it was New Year's Eve 2 years ago, maybe. It was a Camacho. I think it was Honduran. Really, really good.
Your Camacho does grow their tobacco in Honduras.
Yeah.
You know, so depending on that, they have many, many different cigars out on the market.
Sure.
You know, between their regular line, their Corojo line, the Scorpion line, things of that nature. But they make a solid smoke.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I don't know if it was, because I remember now, Scorpion, Corojo. I remember seeing the signs, but I don't remember exactly which one.
Yeah. Well, but if it said Corojo, it's made with Corojo tobacco.
Okay.
So, I mean, that could be part of the filler. Chances are it was the wrapper that they used. But, yeah, there's again, so many varietals. But, yeah, they've been around for a while. You know, they do a lot of things right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that tied to Hector Camacho? Or is that just another thing? Because that's the first thing I thought.
Right, right. Yeah, both will knock you out.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's great. So another thing that I had saw a little while ago when I was doing my research to try and get, you know, when I first started getting into cigars, they have competitions, smoking competitions where who can go the longest without ashing. And sure. I thought that was like, I think it was like I don't know if you've ever seen Insider on YouTube. They do like little niche things, and they happen to go to a real famous cigar lounge in London or somewhere, some real highfalutin place.
Yeah.
And and there's like a competition. I thought that was funny.
Longer sash, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it still happens today. You know, 9 times out of 10, you end up wearing it.
Right.
You know, I was smoking an infamous cigar called the Egg.
Yes.
By Drew Estates, which is double perfecto, if you want to call it, Figurado. It's 42 ring gauge on each end. It blows out into at least a 90 in the middle.
Damn.
So it was a few years ago on my birthday. I was at the Ash, White Ash, and I was given this smoke as a present. Thank you very much. And they made me ash the thing. So I do have a photo of me holding the entire egg by its little nub on the bottom. And the whole thing is a solid egg.
Yeah.
Looks like a cocoon. It was one of the most miserable smoking experiences of my life. You know, smoking the thing upside down, holding it a certain way, not being able to get up and go to the bathroom for 2 hours.
Sure.
You know, it's not the most enjoyable way to enjoy a cigar, I can tell you. You know, there are certain cigars that are just packed so densely and made so well that the ash will hang on for, you know, 5-6 inches, you know, which is impressive.
Yeah.
But it's not what I normally do. You should keep some ash on the end of your cigar to control the burn.
Yes.
And especially the temperature of the burn. But, you know, having an ash that long, it's
cumbersome.
It's hard to maneuver anything around. And you're either going to make a mess of yourself or the floor or both.
Yeah.
The table, et cetera. It happens. You know, I see it happen every day.
Right.
But it's more of a novel thing to do.
Yeah, because there's times where I'll do it, like I'll smoke the cigar. I won't hold it up, but I'll try and see how long I can get it.
Yeah. Do it outside.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then you also mentioned about keeping some on there.
Right.
Which is interesting because, you know, people who smoke anything else, they want to get as much off of the end as...
Yeah, it's a habit to flick ash and stuff.
Yeah.
Know? First of all, you know, another etiquette thing, you never flick an ash. You get on the inside lip of the ashtray and just gently rotate the cigar, and whatever wants to fall off will.
Sure.
You know, but the ash, if you ash it too soon, it's going to form a cone shape, and that's where the cherry is. Now it's outside the cigar. You know, and it's going to burn very hot and singy. So the smoke on the end is a good indication of where that cherry is going to be, and controlling the temperature of you want to smoke cool. That's what you do. So that ash on the end, you know, taking in the air as you draw on the cigar, it's going to, you know, it's not going to just hit the end of the cigar and immediately burn. You know, there's going to be that filter or that buffer there.
Sure.
You know, it's always a good idea to keep, you know, anywhere from a half inch to an inch of ash on your cigar before you go and get rid of it. And again, if you gently twirl it on the inside, just touching the inside lip of the ashtray, whatever wants to fall off will, and you're good to go.
I also understand you're not supposed to mush your cigar when you're done with it. I know that's a big one.
You just push my button on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Smashing out a cigar into an ashtray is probably the biggest no-no. Mm. You know, it's an insult to the cigar maker, to the cigar itself. It also creates a chemical reaction that makes it smell terrible. The instantaneous snuffing out of that cherry is an aggressive thing to do, and it stinks.
Right.
It also makes the ashtray harder to clean by yours truly. you know, or anybody who works in a cigar lounge, you know, you got to spray it and really wipe it down because it really gets in there good. If you want to do the right thing, you let your cigar die with dignity.
Okay.
You just leave it alone. Just let it sit there. If you're done with it, just push it into the middle of the ashtray or off the lip, you know, where it's just held. Because sometimes, you know, I'll want to use the restroom. I don't want to take my cigar with me. I'll just leave it there. That doesn't mean I'm done. You know, but by pushing it into the ashtray, your server will know that you're done with that cigar.
Yeah. It's like putting your utensils next to each other off to the side when you're eating.
Right.
Same idea.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, don't take those, you know.
Right. So we've spoke a whole lot about cigars, which is, you know, the main reason why I wanted to get you on here. But another reason why, you know, it is October.
Oh,
it's, you know, a big month for people who do what else you do. Being a paranormal investigator, you've done it for quite some long time.
Yes, it's 1988.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's so. I've had, like I told you before we started the show, that I've had another paranormal investigator on here, sure. Tom DiAgostino, and he's done it for quite some time too, probably around the same, you know, 80s. Mm-hmm. And listening to some of the stuff he said, it's like, what? Now, don't get me wrong. It's very interesting. It's very cool stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool. I like learning about it. But I'm not super inclined to go hang out in a place where there's the potential for some weird stuff to happen, we can say.
Right, it's not for everybody. Sure. You know, if you're afraid of the dark, claustrophobic, jittery, easily scared, don't do it.
Right.
You know, I was the biggest skeptic. You know, and the reason I did it was I was looking for answers.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot more to it than that, but I'll leave it at that. So I was intrigued enough to read what was out there about it, go to certain conventions, if you will, and talk to multiple authorities on the subject and kind of learn a little bit from them and see what I might need to get going on my own.
Right.
But basically, I started out with just a camera and a recorder. And didn't find much of anything at first. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I've said that before. It's like once you find something that you cannot debunk, there's no going back.
Right.
You know, so you can't unsee, unfeel, unhear the things that you experience. And that can change people, you know, depending on what that experience is. It's a very real thing, and there's a lot out there we don't know about. There's a lot of good groups that I've worked with on different investigations and such. I had a longstanding tenure with the Rhode Island Paranormal Research Group, TRIP-RG. A lot of respect for those guys. They do it right. One of their mottos is they're about the flashlight, not the spotlight. Hmm. You know, they don't want to do TV shows. You know, it's not what they're there for. They're there to help people. They do a lot of private cases. You know, I went on a lot of the preliminary interviews, which was a lengthy interview, to make sure of several things that they were, the people asking for help were legit. We were bringing the group into a safe environment.
Sure.
You know, and I don't know that a lot of groups do that. I'm not sure. You know, but the interview process is very in depth, you know, and it's very thorough, and people know once that first interview is done that, you know, we're serious about what we do. You know, we're here to help, and you know, we're not going to put ourselves or anyone else in harm's way to do it.
Right.
You know, but it is a fascinating subject. The unknown is, you know, how far does space go? What exists? How thin's the veil? So to speak, what happens when you die?
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of
things. The greatest question there.
Yeah, great question. I might let you know, I might not.
Right.
You
know?
But no, it's led me to places I thought I'd never go and things I'd never thought I'd experience.
Sure.
I don't know, you know, how to explain it other than you have to experience it. You know, when I had my first aha moment, I was hooked. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. That just happened.
What was that?
You know, well, I went to a private investigation, private home, and the director at the time tasked me to do base readings. So I took all the EMF readings, temperature, look for fluctuations anywhere in the house. He's like, make sure you check upstairs. So I brought a recorder with me and a spirit box, which is basically an AM, FM frequency modulator. It'll just flip through stations, you know, as a medium.
Okay.
You know. And so I go upstairs and I'm walking through the hall and stuff. And for whatever reason, I stopped at this one bedroom, turned on the light, and I put my recorder, my spirit box down, and I announce myself. You know, Don Paulin, date, time, location. You know, I'm in such and such room. I just like to communicate. I'm doing basically an EVP session.
Mm-hmm.
So to see if I can catch a voice. So I opened the closet door, which was strange because it had a door within the closet. So naturally I opened that door.
Sure.
And it was a dormered out window that is on the front of the house, but there was nothing in it, but it was, there wasn't a speck of dust in it. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. You know, carpeted, painted, brand new, just nothing in there. I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm asking questions. Is there anything you want me to know? Or do you have a message? Can I help you? And I got one word on the recorder on the spirit box. It says, leave. So I did.
Yeah.
I picked up my gear.
Good advice.
Turned everything down, went downstairs. Talked to the director. He's like, well, what happened? I said, I got kicked out.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, really? Where did it happen? I said, upstairs, middle bedroom. He's like, that's exactly where we're going. I said, oh, okay.
Fun.
Glad you told me about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the hot spot. You know, so we eventually got up to that room and brought in the person who was having the experiences into that room. And we did what's called a spirit rescue. And we have a medium in the group. We brought in a second medium, and they have a gift of sight and knowledge as to what they're sensing. Sometimes they can see what it is, who it is, what they need. They're called mediums. Now, I myself am not a medium. You know, if you can see me on camera, I am an extra large. A little paranormal human for you.
There we go.
Right. So, I'm sorry. No, I'm not. So we do the spirit rescue, and the medium in the group's like, oh, there's a little girl coming through, and she's very playful, and she's trying to bring a little boy with them, you know, and she's playing around. She's got this light little voice, and she's very happy, and she went to the light, and she brought a little boy with her.
Sure.
Then they were actually looking for the person's relative who had just passed. That's who they're looking for, who they thought they were still around. Now, the closet that I went into, the person who was having the experience was sitting right in front of it. And they're all holding hands. There were four people in the circle. Two mediums, the person involved with the experience, and another member of the group. So the director at the time was like, oh, there's another person who's coming through. They're not angry, but they're desperate. They're running around, and they're looking for it. And so she kind of guided them to the light. And she said it came out of the closet, and the person who was sitting with the back to the closet kind of froze, and you could see like the vapor when she like exhaled. She could like see her breath, like something cold went right through her.
Whoa.
And went towards the light. Long story short, I'll get to the ending. So I was talking to Maggie, the girl I was working with at the time, and I said, you know, that was pretty intense, you know, because I'd never seen that before. And she's like, yeah. I said, that was pretty amazing. I said, well, I got kicked out of that room. She goes, what do you mean? And I played her the recording. And she goes, oh, honey, no. He wasn't kicking you out. He was telling you he wanted to leave.
Oh, he wanted to leave.
So I learned to think outside the box.
Okay.
You know, and that was rule number one. Don't take it at face value just because you get one word.
Sure.
You know, they could be telling you what happened, what they need, what they want, and not so much don't take it so personally.
Yeah.
But in other words, it's not about you.
Yeah.
Right? Second thing that happened is later on that night when I was listening to my recordings as I was going up the stairs and I put the recorder down on the bureau. After I announced my name, I heard a little girl's voice saying, play, play. I put two and two together. That was the first girl that crossed the light.
Yeah.
When they brought the light, and I played that to Maggie. She's like, yeah, that was a little girl. And that was the first time I actually caught something because there's no kids in the house.
Sure.
It was all adults. You know, and I was the only one upstairs at the time taking a recording, and I played it for her. She's like, wow, that's amazing. That's exactly the voice of the girl that came running through. And so it was my first aha moment.
Right.
I was like, that was cool.
Right. More. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine in a moment like that, it's hard to not take something like leave
right.
at face value and like, let me get the hell out of here.
No problem.
Yeah, yeah.
As you wish.
No, yeah.
Don't hurt me.
Yeah. You had mentioned that it went, you know, this being had gone through the person that was sitting there.
Yes.
And that's crazy because Tom had said that happened to him.
I've had it happen too.
Sure.
So, you know when you eat like hot soup and the first bite goes down and you get burning from the inside out?
Yeah.
Right? The cold is the same way. It starts inward and then radiates out. Mm-hmm. It's not your cold around you first. When it hits you, you know it's like in you. And then that cold just, you know, goosebumps, the hair stands up and sometimes you can see your breath. Everything, the whole temperature changes. And that energy as it is just, you know, that's a very striking sign of what it is.
Right.
You know, and when it happens, you'll know it.
Yeah. Anytime I've watched a movie or a show or something where they talk about ghosts, whether it's real or not, sure. in the movie, they always talk about the temperature change. It's cold in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you gotta, and again, if you think of it on an energy level, okay, if the sun wasn't around to heat the planet, it would be an ice planet. Mm. Okay. So if there is something, you know, a spirit around, it's absorbing energy. You know, it is energy.
Yeah.
And it takes energy and needs energy to either communicate or move something or move in general, right? So it will take it from wherever it can environmentally as well. So my personal theory is that it's absorbing the energy and basically sucking the heat out of a room, you know.
Sure.
To do whatever it needs to do.
Right. It's taken from everywhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question I wanted to ask. Now, you had brought up mediums.
Sure.
And I had always wondered, is a medium born with that ability, or is that something that you can kind of grow and build? Both. Okay.
There's a book out called The Psychic Pathway, which if you have any talent anymore or gift or something, it will help you develop it. Now, I have the book. I won't read it.
Sure.
Because I don't want it. Honestly.
Okay.
You know, because once they know, you know, or can see, you become a beacon.
Okay.
And they'll just rush you if everybody's got something they need to say.
Right.
You know, I see that with the living, never mind the dead. You know,
sure.
Got something to talk about. You know, like, all right, calm down.
Yeah.
And I've seen what they have, and they have certain coping mechanisms that they need to learn on how to keep them at that bay and like shut that down. And I don't want a switch, you know, going on and off.
Right.
I don't need that. But you have to realize that, like, there's a study done on children and their brains. So a very young child, you know, early single digits, all areas of the brain on both hemispheres are firing. These colors, you can see the electricity shows up as different colors with different intensity, right? So the whole area of the brain's lit up. You've got your creativity, your logic, things, everything's going on. As you get older, you literally get dumber.
Mm.
Okay?
Slows down.
Certain areas of the brain shut down. Everything's done on instinct. What you know is what you know.
Sure.
You know what I mean? With mediums, their brains are still turned on, and the tobacco. I need a cigar.
We're mixing the two.
in the same capacity as it was at an early age, they've maintained the brain power, if you will.
Sure.
You know, through whatever reason, through nature or through really honing in on that gift, the gift of sight. I mean, how many kids point and look to an imaginary friend?
Yes.
They're not all imaginary.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah. So are kids good vessels for this type of thing?
100%.
Sure.
You know, they all, like I said, they have, a lot of them have the gift of sight. You know, a lot of things that I've gone and investigated surrounded children waking up at night and screaming or laughing, depending what the entity is, because they can see it. You know, I even showed a couple a picture, a family portrait. I said, have you ever really looked at this picture? They're like, what do you mean? It's, you know, it's you and your husband and your daughter and your son. They're all looking at the camera except for the son. And I said, okay, where's your son looking? Oh, he's kind of looking up. Okay. Trace his line of sight. And if you look in the photograph, you'll see from his line of sight, there's an orb right here. He's looking at a spirit in that picture. And he's the one that could see stuff at night, and, you know, things would happen, like the basket would be moved to the middle of the room. Now, they're both in, you know, cribs. They can't get out of these cribs at all. They're too small. And there'd be, like, a basket flipped upside down, placed right in the middle of the room. And the parents would walk in and be like, there's no way the kids did this.
Yeah.
They installed cameras, and you could see the thing flipping. You know, so I'm like, yeah, you got some action here. And they can see it. You can't.
Right.
But, you know. But yeah, kids, a lot of kids, animals, dogs will bark at the wall for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, when they scratch at the door or whatever. Chances are there's something there. Do you have to be afraid of it? No.
I also feel like as an adult, they're quicker to just kind of be like, ah.
Yeah.
You know, what's that?
The logic in you, you know, the factual side of you, you know, the
you'll ignore it.
Empirical side of you, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a possibility. They'll just immediately rule it out.
Sure. You know? Okay. That could also be because they're scared. They don't want to entertain the idea of it.
So, you know, ignorance is bliss when it comes to this stuff, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know, some people can handle it and some people just break down.
Right. Yeah. It seems like a Pandora's box. You open it and it's like, now you're in it. That's it.
You're in it.
Yeah, I always had a, like I said, I went to a Catholic school as a young boy. And, you know, there were teachers that would talk about, oh, don't, you know, that's, don't open that door. And, you know, it might be, it might have been motivated by something else in those days. But from what you're saying, it sounds like it's true. You, if you're not ready to engage in that type of thing, then leave it be.
Do not use a Ouija board.
Right.
Don't use it.
Is that like an entryway?
Oh, it opens a portal that you, if you don't know how to close it.
Yeah.
You did it.
Anything
you
can happen.
We've cleaned up a few messes that have been caused by those things.
Just a Ouija board.
Just a Ouija board.
Yeah. I've used one.
Yeah.
It didn't, nothing happened. But, okay. You know, I've,
good.
Yeah. As kids, you know, in high school or whatever. And we tried it outside. So maybe because it was outside.
There are elementals out there. You never know what's, what's around.
Sure.
You know.
Is there
who's listening?
Right. Is there a higher chance for it in the house?
I don't know.
Honestly,
I don't have enough experience with the Ouija board to see if, you know, you could really, you know, chances are in a house it's more common because, you know, spirits tend to stick around in certain locations. Very few of them travel the world, you know what I mean? They're usually in the place that they know.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of them are just perfectly fine, just overlooking, doing whatever they do, and not interfering at all. But you start messing with things. A lot of people who actually do renovations on an old house usually have an issue.
Right. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you'd think as a spirit, you'd branch out a little bit at this point in your life.
Yeah. You know,
you'd want to leave.
Yeah. That's a mystery to me.
Yeah.
As to, you know, just what is your range? You know, it could be as big as your property is. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, whereas they're afraid to pass beyond that or what it is. I don't know. Not yet.
Right.
Not in a hurry to find out, but yeah.
Right. So we're getting close here. We're going to wrap this thing up soon. Right. Is there anything going on either with the Cigar Lounge, with yourself and cigars, with the paranormal stuff, anything interesting coming up that you want to let anyone know about?
No, I don't have anything paranormal going on. Because I work so much at the lounge, I have very minimal time to, you know, go exploring and investigating. I miss my group a lot, but they understand. But yeah, the White Ash, I mean, our hours are every night till midnight, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 1 a.m., you know, if you want to talk to me, just hit me up on Facebook or on the White Ash page. Be happy to help, you know, whatever you need, mentoring you, whatever. Don't be afraid. You know, I also do a show with Nisi Kodia called Mrs. Cigars on Instagram. She does a show called Let's Talk About Cigars, whereas her listeners and viewers ask questions and I'll answer the questions on her show.
Is it like a live?
Yeah, that's a live thing we do once a month. That should be coming up pretty soon.
Oh, cool.
I'm Don Rocca 10 on Instagram, Don Paulin on Facebook. I've got tasting videos on there as well as the White Ash page. I've got Wicked ADD, so I do a 60-second video. You know, I show you this is the cigar, binder, wrapper, filler, and some tasting notes. So, yeah, we do a dinner once a month as well, which is great. A lot of different events. I also do a very special event that you'll see on there called No Media Night, which is a very cool, I'm not going to give it away, but you have to experience it.
Sure.
It's a very cool way to enjoy a cigar in a night that certain way. Another tip, if you want to be a cigar aficionado, you always carry two cigars with you. Two. So you'd have one to enjoy and another to share. So this one's for you, brother.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
There you go.
Tell me about this one before we wrap it up.
Roma de Cuba.
All right.
It's part of the Ashton line as well as the San Cristobals. Very good construction. Nice medium cigar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good anytime smoke. You can get away with it in the morning as well. It's not aggressive. It's just it's like got a rich taste of coffee to it, a little bit of earth, a touch of pepper.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. It's the first time I've gotten a gift on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just sad.
Yeah. Right? Who am I bringing on this damn thing? Right.
What the heck? You know, next guy you got to bring on is the owner of a Mercedes dealership.
Sure.
Right? Aim high.
Yeah. Always bring two Mercedes with you.
That's right. I like it.
Well, sir, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Definitely appreciate it. Might smoke this thing tonight.
Yeah.
Guys, make sure you follow the show. Links in the description. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere else. Yes. And that's it, guys. Peace.
Right on.
Of course, yes, sir.
That was great.
Yeah. Super easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was phenomenal. That'll be
even a team.